Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program that's devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong, even destructive, about the institutions that are manipulating our nation, religious, political, media institutions, as well as military invasions and economic schemes. We finally come to realize that the institutions that claim to be the solution are actually the problem. So instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here on this program is to understand what is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet, while predicting how these events will influence our world over the next 5 to 10 years. And that is why during our second hour, we're going to provide hope. We're going to do so by engaging God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the hope that we all so desperately desire. If you'd like to participate in this program anytime over the next 2 hours, feel free to do so. Feel free. 877-300-7645. You know, as we turn to what happened in the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C., what we find is the same thing that we have found with virtually every mass shooting in American history. Certainly those within the last 50 years that we have been able to investigate and chronicle. And there is a common denominator amongst virtually all of them. The individual is almost always a patient of a psychiatric either doctor or clinic, and they are almost always using psychiatric drugs. This individual was suffering from paranoia. Since that is the common denominator with those who perpetrate mass shootings like this, it begs the question, is society better when the few are kept out of the mainstream of society so that the many are protected, especially when there is a direct correlation between the use of these psychiatric drugs and mass killings? Is society better served when we constrain the liberty and the privacy of the few to protect the safety and the lives of the many? Now, that does not mean that you, even if you were to say, you know, we really ought not to have patient-client privilege when the issue is paranoia, when the issue is serious mental illness, when the issue is so severe that it requires powerful mind-altering drugs, that because those individuals have the potential to be so deadly that in those cases it is not appropriate for that information to be kept from those that they may harm. It's like they're carrying a concealed weapon. So, are we better off if we were to provide very comfortable, very nice accommodation for those who are suffering from severe psychiatric disorders? You know, we've all seen and heard of the psychiatric facilities that were so prevalent 50 years ago really did not treat those who had been committed to them well. And it was a society that a judge or a doctor could commit someone without trial or without due process to essentially reasonably decent accommodation in these facilities, but with no ability on their own to leave. Yeah, and there are concerns about that. But if a society can engage in countless wars, certainly it can create facilities that treat those who need to be separated from society because of some deficiency that is not of their own causing, can be treated nicely. But we went to the far extreme, as we typically do, and We declared that all such information has to be kept secret. And then we said that they could not be kept in these facilities and that almost all of those facilities were shut down. So this is what we get. If you want to know why we have moved from having psychiatric facilities to crazy people that shoot at our presidents and crazy people that take guns into places like the Navy Yard and shoot at these individuals, is because we made that choice. We shut them down. We allowed them to integrate within society secretly, carrying this weapon of mass destruction in their brains. It was a choice we made. There was a consequence. I think the pendulum swung far too far, and that we failed to consider the consequence of our actions, nor did we conceive a plan that would have been so much better to make those facilities world class. You know, my younger brother's mentally handicapped. He can't participate in society without considerable support and assistance. Now, it would be criminal for him to be locked up and treated as if he were a criminal. He's not. He's an extraordinarily loving and caring individual. But by the same token, he can't just be allowed to do whatever he wants, because he will get himself into trouble, because his ability to execute good judgment is not wholly there. And so there is a middle ground where we ought to, as a society, spend less money on war, spend less money giving free medical care and free food and free housing and free money to those who are unwilling to work but are able to work, and we ought to be able to direct our resources charitably to those who can't care for themselves for no fault of their own, and create as positive a life as we can for them, but not necessarily independently. And such is the case with these psychotic killers. Now, there's another issue here. The government is spending billions of dollars and wants to spy on every phone call and every internet click of anyone who the government thinks is a threat to them. And yet, the government can't do a proper background check of individuals they give the highest security clearance. This guy didn't steal the pass cards. He was given them. He worked for Hewlett-Packard. He had formerly been in the U.S. Navy. Now he was a contractor with Hewlett-Packard. He was assigned to the servers, the computers that the Navy was using to keep track of its fleet. And everyone knew that he had severe psychiatric issues. It was there for the knowing. And yet, the government is willing to spy on average Americans, but is not willing to do its due diligence, doing a proper investigation of who it allows into sensitive facilities. There's another one last issue that I want to bring up here, then I want to return to Putin's speech, because it really is the most defining article of our day. And that is that we also made a horrible decision about 20 or 30, maybe even 40 years ago, where we created a defense in the legal system called innocent by reason of insanity. Now, it's one thing to say guilty and insane, and therefore the penalty for committing the crime has to be somehow mitigated and changed because the individual did not have the ability to exercise good judgment. So the individual committed the crime. They're guilty of having done so, but they were insane. You know, the shooting of Ronald Reagan and near killing of him was done by a similarly insane individual. And so, but, you know, he was determined innocent by reason of insanity. And we need to be very careful in this regard, because Being insane, being incapable of exercising good judgment, does not make one innocent when they commit a crime. This individual most likely will, well, he's dead, so he won't have a trial. But if he were to have survived it, his defense would have been, I'm insane. Here's proof. And so we as a society, it's one of a thousand things we have to change, but it is one that is wrong. We ought not have a defense of you're innocent by reason of being insane. You're guilty, but rather than if you're insane, rather than spending your eternity and the rest of your life, if it's a mass murder, in a prison, because you're insane, you'd have the opportunity to do it in a psychiatric ward that is for similar convicted criminals. Those things known, I'd like to return to the speech that was not speech, but op-ed piece written by Vladimir Putin. It is just so profound because it shows that America is not even remotely what America once was. You know, there was a time not all that long ago where the Soviet Union and even fascist Russia, which is what it's become now, was considered the evil empire, and for good reason. In our partnering with the Soviet Union during World War II left Europe as bad in many places, sometimes worse than we found it. Because it was communism is an extraordinarily oppressive and dehumanizing political and economic system. And so the nations that became overrun with the USSR at the end of the war suffered a fate worse under the USSR than they suffered under Hitler. And I think the only nation that actually suffered more under Hitler than they did the USSR, they suffered under both, was Poland. But most of the other Eastern European countries were treated far worse by the communists than they were by the Nazis. And so, you know, we're dealing with a nation that knew nothing but propaganda. It knew nothing but violence. It was Machiavellian, and that the ends always justified the means. It was oppressive, treated everyone as if they were slaves. But now look at us. We've changed places. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're comparing Russia to the United States and how in the world we changed places. You know, it happens so very quickly, too. You know, you look at the Soviet Union, we considered them to be a prison state. You know, we talk about the gulags and the how many Russians were sent off to prison to languish and die. And yet now, America's is the largest prison state in the world. The percentage of our population that we imprison is many times greater than the next worst culprit. You know, we have become what we detested. We thought of the Soviet Union as this kind of hollow country that was only a superpower because they overemphasized their military. And yet America's military is so overemphasized, it's larger than the rest of the world's militaries combined. We have become what we detested. We thought of Russia as a police state where, you know, if the people were essentially unarmed and there was just all manner of government policing units that with their automatic weapons and assault vehicles could immediately squelch any uprising. But we've become the epitome of a police state. Look what just happened in Washington, what happened in Boston. You know, we considered ourselves the most prosperous nation on earth, and we were. And now we're the most indebted. And yet, Russia is flourishing economically. How did we change places? You know, you look at communist China, and We used to mock anything made in China and laugh at how inefficient the communist system was as it relates to their economy. And yet, we imposed all manner of communism and socialism on our businesses and economically in a global way and on the American economy, and we crippled it, while China chose to use free enterprise. And they became the leading manufacturing country in the world. What happened to us over such a short period of time, and why?
We switched places because of arrogance. Basically, we switched because of arrogance. We won the Cold War, and we won the Cold War. Yeah. And everybody believes that. Everybody firmly believes that we came out unscathed and we're stronger than we've ever been.
Yeah,
and because of that, and because nobody ever wants to be told the truth about where we're at. If you talk to Russians, they know where they're at as far as their country goes. They know where they're sitting. They have a good idea of what's going on.
They know that they are now a fascist country with no free press. They know where they are, and it's not a good place. I mean, Putin has taken Russia to a very dark place, but economically, they're in a vastly superior position than is the United States. But you know, you even talk about winning the Cold War. We didn't win the Cold War. We both lost the Cold War.
No.
What Reagan's strategy in the Cold War was, we will outspend the Russians militarily, and because they can't keep up with our spending, it will bankrupt Russia. And it did.
And it bankrupted it bankrupted us.
It did exactly the same thing to us. It just took longer. In our case, because we were more effective at printing money to borrow our way out of it. But now we're $60 trillion in debt when you consider the unfunded mandates. It bankrupted both countries.
Yeah, but we didn't win. We both lost. If you ask the average American, they will tell you, we kicked Russia's butt in the Cold War.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not the case.
It's just not the case because we
accept the lies that get told to us, and we never look to find the truth.
So maybe it is more than just arrogance. Maybe it's also apathy. We stopped working.
Yeah, apathy, arrogance.
We stopped learning. We stopped thinking.
Ignorance. Ignorance plays a huge part.
But here we are. You know, the very thing that we used to pride ourselves in and detest when we saw other things in other people, we've become what we detested. And those other nations have become what we once took pride in. We have literally switched positions, and there's no more evidence of this than the Putin speech, where what he says is true and what the President of the United States says is just a pile of lies. So how is it that we've reached that point? Well, here's the other thing that was interesting to us, is that if you go back 30 years ago, we used to constantly condemn Russia for military intervention. For encouraging, for example, Vietnam, when we, in fact, encouraged the Afghan War in the same way that they encouraged that, and that our CIA was always being deployed to encourage insurrections around the world. And yet, today, it's not the Russians that are meddling with their military throughout the world. It's the United States. We've become what we once despised. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're comparing what we once were and what we have become to what the nations that we used to mock once were and what they have become. And it truly is alarming, and it has never been pointed out more vividly than it was in the contrast between Barack Hussein Obama's rantings about Syria and Vladimir Putin's response. Let me again share this paragraph. We have Larry on the line, and we'll get his input as well. This was the most important paragraph of his letter. It is alarming that military intervention and internal conflicts in foreign countries has become commonplace for the United States. It is alarming that military intervention in internal conflicts in foreign countries has become commonplace for the United States. That used to be commonplace for the Russians. when they were the USSR. Is it in America's long-term interest? No, I doubt it, it says. Millions around the world increasingly see America not as a model of democracy, but as relying solely on brute force, cobbling coalitions together under the slogan, you're either with us or you're against us. So let's look at our history. Is he right? Following World War II, where we all think this was the great war and the greatest generation, and yet in the Pacific, of course, we sacrificed 300,000 of our young men and women to avenge the deaths of 3,000. And in Europe, we turned Europe over from one maniacal dictator to one every bit as maniacal, and just shifting control of much of Europe from Hitler to Stalin. But after that, we have Korea, then Vietnam, even Laos, Grenada, Panama, Serbia, Somalia, Afghanistan, not once but twice, Iraq, not once but twice, Kuwait, Libya, Pakistan and Yemen, where we deploy our drones with reckless abandon, Egypt and Syria, where we are the primary weapons suppliers. So over the course of 60 years, that's 15 times that we have done exactly what Putin has said it is alarming that we are doing so frequently. 15 times in 60 years. That's once every presidential term. It's stunning that we have actually become warmongers. I mean, if you look at it, we've got the biggest military in the world, bigger than the rest of the world combined. We are the primary supplier of weapons of mass destruction around the world. No one even comes close in terms of providing these kinds of weapons. We supply them to the most brutal dictators. And we use our military in just hideous ways, counterproductive ways. Very often using them, deploying them based upon lies, as we did in Vietnam, in the case of Serbia, in the case of Somalia, in the case of Afghanistan, not once but twice, in the case of Iraq, not once but twice, and now in the case of Syria. What's wrong with us? Why is it that so few Americans can see themselves? Or maybe I should be celebrating this, Larry. Because for a moment in time, for the first time maybe ever in America's history, two-thirds of Americans are opposed to deploying America's military again in one failed mission after another. So maybe this is the ultimate time of celebration.
Maybe.
That Putin's not the only one that gets it.
Another one-third. I really don't get what the other one-third is thinking. Let's go over. You realize that and if they would clearly think this out, Obama had to waive certain aspects of banning arming, you know, of the ban on arming terrorists,
right,
so that he can arm the Syrian rebels. I mean, we've now entered the world of the surreal.
We have. We fight them in Afghanistan, and we claim that they are the terrorists that we are at war against in Afghanistan. We claim that in Iraq. We claim that's why we have to spend $650 billion a year on our military, because we're in a war against terrorists. And yet in Syria, the exact same cast of characters we're arming. In Libya, it's the same cast of characters that we're arming.
In Afghanistan, the bulk of what they're doing is guarding opium fields.
Of course.
Opium production is way, way, way up, and it's all over the country. It's all over the world now.
Yeah.
That's what's going on over there. I mean, let's just say it. Okay, really.
What in the world are we doing? Why would we? I mean, America has had a history of manufacturing our next enemy. You know, we aided and abetted Stalin in World War II, and he became our enemy in the Cold War. We supplied the weapons to Saddam Hussein, and then we struck out a war against him. We were the ones that armed and aided Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and then we went to war against them. But at least in the past, a decade or so would transpire from the time that we manufactured our enemy to the time that we went to war against them. But now we're doing it simultaneously. We're fighting.
That's impossible. That's impossible. You can't be fighting an enemy and arming an enemy at the same time.
We are.
Unless there's money to be made by someone. And what's going on here is that every one of these wars help feed Halliburton. They help feed the military-industrial complex. They, you know, I'm not some left-wing lib over here. You know,
no, but you know, it's also exactly what Jefferson warned us against. He says, you know, because of a constant state of war, we've created a standing army, and he says the standing army is the germ of all the other things that are so harmful to a nation's liberty. And, you know, he says it's taxes, it's seductive propaganda, it's the kind of control mechanisms that exist, the elevated control that is given to the executive branch. And it's,
we're
witnessing all these things. And maybe that is the reason that we've changed places with Russia, where we have become what we once despised. And maybe it is a direct result of America choosing to be at a constant state of war.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not the first time that we've armed a group of people that we're supposedly fighting. We armed the drug cartels in Mexico. We trained them.
Right.
At the University of America, gave them ranger training. And then we have a war on drugs where we enlarge a police state.
Of course.
So, you know, I mean, there's something, people have to understand, there's something dreadfully wrong with the government now.
Right.
I mean, the people are no longer in charge. I heard Harry Reid came out the other day saying that it's the senators who should pick who journalists really are.
Think of this. Now, Putin went on to say, this is Putin's next line. He says, but force has proved ineffective and pointless. I mean, look at it. What did we accomplish by force in Vietnam? We sacrificed 60,000 Americans, making a bad situation worse. Force proved ineffective and pointless.
Did we accomplish? Were sitting at the peace table at the end of Vietnam, and everybody knew it. Everyone was trying to rush out of Saigon. There were 12 divisions of NVA on their way down to South Vietnam. That's just a fact.
What did we accomplish?
People, put them on boats, kill them, cut people's tongues out, tie them to trees.
Right. What did we accomplish in Serbia when we decided we would go to war against the Christians who had been subject to genocide by the Muslims in World War II, and we decided that no, you can't get retribution. You can't do that. We're going to go and we're going to bomb the victims of one of the worst Holocausts in human history. What did we accomplish?
And I'm glad you brought that up. Simon Wiesenthal himself said, as a percentage of people, those who got wiped out at the largest percentage were not the Jews, but the Serbs.
Of course.
And do you know that there were 28 crack divisions of Germans in there systematically murdering, raping, robbing the Serbian people? And they worked with who? The Ustasis, the Muslims.
Right. The Muslims.
And even in the midst of all that,
of
they
them.
Managed to save over 500 American airmen during World War II. And the way we paid them back was to bomb the hell out of them.
Yeah,
it's just insane.
It is insane. And one of the things that's so sad about this, too, is that the Roman Catholic Church was sided with the Muslims to kill the Serbian Christians because they weren't Roman Catholic Christians.
Well, sure.
And they served as the mutilating prison guards. But 800,000 killed. Look at Somalia. What was the purpose of us having our military in Somalia? In Afghanistan. What did we create in first Afghanistan except the Taliban and Al-Qaeda? What did we create in second Afghanistan? I mean,
there's a colonel that's saying, you know, the bulk of the, and he came public with it, the bulk of the Taliban were flown out into Pakistan before we ever entered, and we're the ones who did the flying.
Of course.
And we also provided them with gold and with weapons.
Oh, we flew
there were a bunch of 15-year-olds with The
Bush flew, score of C-130s into Afghanistan filled to the brim with $100 bills. So there'd be no accountability as to where the money went. If you look at what we did in Iraq, is we broke a country. We took a country that was the enemy of Iran and therefore diminished Iran's influence, and we gave that country to Iran so that now Syria is under the control of Iran, as is Iraq.
I don't think these are accidents.
What Putin says, it's proved ineffective and pointless. I would say that he's being way too generous here. It's proved counterproductive and suicidal.
Oh, yeah.
It's proved counterproductive and suicidal.
Understanding that the idea is to break the American economy and have America invaded. That's been the long-term goal.
I don't think that America is going to get invaded, but you break the economy and it doesn't matter. You have chaos, anarchy. So Afghanistan is reeling, Putin writes, and he's right. It's reeling. And no one can say what will happen after international forces withdraw. Oh, yeah, he knows what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. I talked about what was going to happen when the international forces, which are almost all Americans, withdraw from Afghanistan before we invaded Afghanistan. It will be exactly as was the case with Vietnam. It will be as if we were never there, except for all of the blood and coin that we spilled in the process. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. So in his open letter to America's government officials and to our citizens, Putin was actually too generous when he said, but force has proved ineffective and pointless when force has proved to be counterproductive and suicidal. He said Afghanistan is reeling and no one can say what will happen when international forces are withdrawn. Well, actually, we know what's going to happen. I knew it was going to happen before the forces were deployed. Libya is divided, he wrote, into tribes and clans. That's also too kind. Libya now is controlled by Mujahideen that we empowered. And they are exporting Islamic terrorism around the Middle East. In Iraq, Putin wrote, the civil war continues with dozens killed each day. We broke the country. Iraq is far worse than what he presents it here. Yes, we broke the country and there's an ongoing civil war. But it's far worse than that, because by invading Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, we are the reason for this Syrian civil war. In the United States, many draw an analogy between Iraq and Syria and ask why their government would want to repeat those mistakes. Yes, look, we invaded Iraq and created the Syrian civil war because we expanded the Iranian sphere of influence. And now the Saudis and the Qataris are trying to wage a proxy war to rein it in. That's what we created. So why would we now want to invade Syria when this is a war that we conceived? And the last time we made an invasion, all we did is spread and increase the size of the mess. He says, the American people are beginning to wake up to this. Why isn't the government aware of it? And he writes, no matter how targeted the strikes or how sophisticated the weapons, civilian casualties are inevitable, including the elderly and children whom the strikes would be meant to protect. And with each Muslim child and woman killed by an American weapon, America manufactures 100 enemy when it kills none. Now, we don't share this information, Larry, to make people angry. We don't share it because we're just trying to be meanies out here. We share it because sometime before it's too late, if there's going to be any hope for us individually, for our families, we're going to have to come to the realization that America isn't what it once was. Oh, the land is beautiful. Many of the people are wonderful. But the government... it's rotten. And there is no way to fix it by simply rearranging the deck chairs on this Titanic of state. And so when Americans begin to realize that whether it be militarily, politically, economically, that America's compass is completely broken. That it is counterproductive and suicidal to continue to rally around the flag and to depend on America to provide for your economic prosperity, to provide for your rights, to provide for your freedoms. The government is doing everything they can to destroy your freedoms, your rights,
oh,
your prosperity.
You know, I read the other day that the FDAA got involved in a case where a girl out in the country was growing her own little vegetable garden inside an enclosed fence near her house, and that is now illegal, according to the FDAA.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. We've manufactured a monster here, and you know, we are to blame, whether it's our arrogance or our apathy, whether it's our educational system that has convinced and indoctrinated so many to stop being judgmental, to stop exercising good judgment, to just go along, to not be critical because it sounds hateful. I can't tell you all of the reasons that we've ended up in this spot, but I can tell you that if you continue to support and rely upon the government and its military and its police and its economic malfeasance, it's going to be suicidal for you.
Can I ask you something, Yada?
Sure.
Quickly here. If an American military man shoots somebody in the head today over in Afghanistan, are you one inch more towards freedom?
Yeah, of course not. And the reality is, when you look at Iraq, there was no al-Qaeda presence of any kind in Iraq when we invaded. But the time we left, al-Qaeda was the second most powerful force in the country. You know, we've made that situation worse with our bullets and bombs. You can't win a religious war with bullets and bombs. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the news and commercial break.